Hey, it's Shauna Meyerson with the Yoga of War podcast, going totally impromptu live today in response to the reports that Hamas has allegedly agreed to a new hostage deal that involves releasing five hostages. Keeping in mind that four of them have already been murdered by Hamas. One is very strongly believed to still be alive. I will get into the details of that. Now, this agreement has not yet been ratified by Israel, and I just want to talk about the ramifications of this deal, how it came about, and some of the concerns that may come out of it. That being said, seeing the release of hostages over the last few months has driven home so deeply to all of our hearts the importance of getting every single hostage home. It has been excruciating to not only watch the releases, the ridiculous and in barbaric, sadistic circuses that the terrorists of Hamas and other Gazan terrorist groups set up for those releases, but seeing the condition of the hostages and hearing their stories, if you have been listening to the stories that the hostages have been telling about their captivity, gut-wrenching isn't even the word. There are no words to explain the torture that these hostages had to endure. And thank God survived. And that having them home in Israel to be cared for, to be healed, and also for, of course, their families to have the opportunity to heal as well. And of course, there's so much bittersweet emotion that comes with this, right? Because some of the hostages came back in what appeared to be pretty good condition. Others came back in what every single person who has seen has no choice but to compare to literal, like, Holocaust victims. And then, of course, there are those who came home in coffins. If you don't know the numbers, people are always asking, so how many hostages are still in Gaza? The answer is 59 known hostages are still being held in Gaza. Now, of those 59, 24 are believed to be alive, and 35 are believed to have been murdered by Hamas. So let's keep that in mind, that when we're talking about hostage negotiations, a lot of it is literally releasing Hamas terrorist murderers from jail in exchange for dead bodies of Israelis that were murdered by Hamas. Many were murdered on October 7th. If you don't know, Hamas knows that these are their bargaining chips, so they literally took dead bodies from Israel and drag them into Gaza for exactly what's going on now. The release of their murderers, Hamas murderers that have been in Israeli prisons, as well as what is turning out to be a very, very extended ceasefire, because this is what they do. Though Trump says he does not want the hostages released in dribs and drabs it is. And it's not just dribs and drabs, but now we're not even in dribbing or drabbing. Right now we're in just dragging feet and wasting time, so that what they're receiving, Hamas is receiving, is free ceasefire. So that they can rebuild and rearm with zero repercussion. And this is a real challenge, because ultimately there's nothing that Israelis want more, and I think most humans, than to get all the hostages home. Now, the problem is that there doesn't seem to be any scenario on earth, period, any construction thereof, wherein Hamas would actually release all of the hostages. So why would they? This is their only bargaining chips, right? And so if they release them all, then Israel has carte blanche to go into Gaza and do anything that they want. Not only what they want, but with Donald Trump's blessing, right? So Hamas is anything but stupid. I always hate giving credit to smart terrorists, but they've been proven to be very smart terrorists. And they are at this point highly incentivized to take as many Israeli hostages as possible forthgoing, knowing that the price that Israel is willing to pay for hostages, even murdered hostages, is extraordinarily high. So I want to talk about this deal or this deal proposal that was announced today. So as I mentioned, there are 5 of the 59 remaining hostages in Gaza who have dual U.S. and Israeli citizenship, okay? Perhaps by now, especially if you have been following this closely, or perhaps if you're in the American Jewish community, these are household names. The first is Idan Alexander. So why is he the first? Because he is the one who is, by all accounts, assumed to be alive. And from the testimonies of released hostages, in what is being explained as relatively good condition. So that is definitely encouraging. The other 4 have all been murdered by Hamas. Okay, at least 3 on October 7th, and I think that the 4th one was murdered in captivity, and that would be Itai Chen. And the other 3 are Omer Neutra. You've probably heard a lot about him. He was assumed to have been captured alive, but determined a few months ago that he actually was massacred on October 7th and his body taken to Gaza as a hostage. As Trump says, what kind of sick person, a person is a weird word because they're not people, what kind of sick monster holds dead bodies captive? The answer is Hamas, because they get hundreds of murdered prisoners back in exchange, not to mention all sorts of other concessions from Israel, such as withdrawing troops or extending these ceasefires seemingly indefinitely. Now, let me go on record. All things being equal, I don't want war. I would love to see this war end. I mean, not just today. I would love to have seen it end 17 and a half months ago. But the fact is that Israel cannot continue the status quo wherein they have a terrorist faction ruling the Gaza Strip, and every few years they decide to come and attack Israel again. By the way, Israel has never broken a ceasefire with Gaza. It has always been Hamas every time. So keep that in mind, that when we talk about ceasefire, what it means is that Israel is going to back off until Hamas forces their hands again, usually with thousands or tens of thousands of rockets, before Israel even responds. Now, the last 2 hostages Judy Weinstein Haggai and Gadi Haggai, who were partners, they're older. They're in, I want to say their 60s or 70s. I don't exactly remember, as is the common situation. Two-peace activists on a kibbutz, older people, no threat to anyone, massacred on 10/7 and dragged into Gaza. So this is what we're talking about with the proposed deal that is on the table right now. One live hostage, Idan Alexander, four murdered hostages, Itai Chen, Omer Nitra, Gadi Haggai, and Judy Weinstein Haggai. Okay. What do they all have in common? They are all Americans. Okay. Are you shocked? You shouldn't be. I actually posted a while ago, right after this, the last hostage release, that the next person to come out would be Idan Alexander. And it was quite obvious because right now Hamas is doing whatever it can to appease Donald Trump, wherein at the same time making only minimal concessions towards Israel. And it sort of works, right? Like, so Donald Trump has a very big ego. And if he feels like somebody is doing something for him, then cool. Maybe we could talk. Okay, so on one hand, every single hostage released is a miracle, is a blessing, and we need to do everything we can to get every single hostage home, hard stop. Every time one comes home, we're all reminded. We watch in, you know, these very conflicted emotions of like warmth and thrill and horror and worry and anguish about those who are being left behind. And so when it comes to these five American hostages being released, it raises some real issues, some real questions about who is being left behind and what will be the long-term ramifications of this deal. So let me go over a really truncated history of like final threats by Donald Trump, right? So before Donald Trump came into office, he said all of the hostages must be released by January 20th or else there will be all hell to pay, right? I'm not quoting, so I'm not reading it, but this is a summation. So we all know what happened. Stage one of a very, very bad hostage deal took effect the day of his inauguration. And rather than all hostages being released, we got three that day. And ultimately, 33 over the course of the subsequent 6 weeks, plus five Thai workers, and if I remember correctly, a Russian hostage as well that were added into that mix. So a little bit more than we quote unquote bargained for. So that was the first final threat. The second final threat came a few weeks later. No more dribs and drabs. We want them all at once, or all hell will break loose. Number three, same thing. This was the long tweet that I think came out last week where he said, okay, final straw. We need all the hostages home. What kind of sick people hold dead bodies, by the way? And by the way, people of Gaza, if you don't leave, you're in trouble too. Get out. This is my final threat. Okay? So, in case you didn't get the memo, Hamas doesn't care. Hamas couldn't care less. And they couldn't care less for a number of reasons. One is you can't have three final threats, because now there's nothing final about them, so why should they listen? Second, how is all hell going to break loose exactly? Like, what does that mean? It means that Trump is going to hand the football back to Benjamin Netanyahu, to do what he wants. Okay? Great. So that brings us back to exactly where we were on October 8th, which is this war could have been done in days, 2-3 days, if it weren't for the hostages. Okay? It really complicates things. Israel can't just go in and make all hell break loose, because it would mean the most certain death of whatever hostages remain alive, and the, in essence, the inability to retrieve the bodies of those who aren't. And so this is a very, very, very difficult calculus, because if Israel goes in and finishes the war and sacrifices these last 24 people, first of all, it will destroy the morale of Israel, that the people of Israel, and I think all good people around the world, are just begging to get these hostages home, the live hostages in particular. But beyond that, if they go in and destroy Hamas, then how many more lives will they save in the long run? The answer is most likely many, many, many times more than 24. Thousands, probably, maybe tens of thousands. And so all hell breaking loose isn't as simple as, okay, we've got the munitions that we need, we've got the bombs, we've got the manpower, we've got the things, let's just go in and finish the job. It's just not that simple. And I don't mean to be flip about this. Again, I am not somebody who loves war. I hate war. I hate war. However, I'm also a realist. And when it comes to terrorists, it is the only way to even begin to defeat terror. It's not a thing that just goes away if you ignore it. So these warnings from Trump, it's sort of like if I'm on the playground and there's a really big bully and I have my little brother next to me, and I'm like, if you're not nice to me, my little brother's gonna beat you up. My little brother's like, how am I gonna beat that guy up? Like, no matter how much my little brother wants to defend me, it's not really kosher, or for that matter, much of a threat to say, okay, well, this is what's gonna happen. Okay, so let's pretend that this threat was legitimate, and Hamas is like, okay, great. Well, we know one thing about Donald Trump, right? And that is he loves making deals. So what if we just give him the Americans and go back to long negotiations and dribs and drabs once again? Maybe that will solve the problem. Now, let's keep in mind that first, Donald Trump had said, everyone out, every hostage released before I become president. Then three came out. And then dribs and drabs, we got 33 plus perhaps six out. And then he says another threat and says, I can't watch this anymore. This can't happen anymore. It's all or nothing. So make your decision, Hamas. You need to release all of the hostages at this point or else. Then, a few days later, we get this report that the new Witkoff hostage offer was for half. So half come out, then we have like this stage two where basically tons and tons of prisoners come out, Israel withdraws, and then the other half, okay? Then that changed to 10. So it was going to be 10 live hostages, which, by the way, is less than half of the 24 that are presumed to be alive. And then we'll see. Now it looks like we're talking about 5, all with dual U.S. Israeli citizenship, and 4 of whom we know have already been murdered. So in essence, we went from every single one must be released to one must be released. So the question is Trump going to stand by his word that he is going to ensure that every single hostage gets home, or are the U.S. hostages enough? Now, let's keep in mind that this is going to be Trump's last term. Okay, and the only way for his legacy to continue is he's putting his eggs in the J.D. Vance basket, right? He purposely chose a very, very young person to follow him and carry the torch. Now, J.D. Vance definitely has the ear of the president. Maybe he's his vice president. But in addition, J.D. Vance is a nationalist, an isolationist, and all other things being equal, he would rather pull out of all foreign interests. So if we get our Americans home, then that greatly diminishes our interest in the rest of the hostages that Hamas is holding. So this is very disturbing. And how did this deal come about in the first place? So you may have heard there was a special envoy for hostages, Adam Boehler, sorry, Freudian slip, Adam Boehler, who was sent in to help with the negotiations, and he took it upon himself to set up in-person direct negotiations with Hamas. Okay, you might be saying, so what? So what is that we have a policy of not negotiating with terrorists, especially direct negotiations versus what has been going on thus far, which is indirect negotiations such as Qatar or Egypt as an intermediary that is speaking to both parties. If you could imagine like Israel and U.S. in this room, not literally in the room necessarily, and Hamas and all Iran and all their terrorists in this room, and then there's like Qatar or Egypt in the middle, and they're like just sort of shuttling back and forth with the messages. Okay, it may not seem like that much of a difference, but is there a difference if you have somebody in your life? Is there a difference between talking to them directly or having an intermediary? Of course, there's a huge difference. And it also shows that it gives Hamas validity when a U.S. envoy sits down with somebody who represents a designated terrorist organization. Now, who is this Adam Boehler? He was a roommate of Jared Kushner in college or grad school, I can't remember. And apparently he also took part in the Abraham Accords, which were a monumental, game-changing, world-changing accords. I don't know what his role in it, but apparently it was a role. Now, let's set aside any accusations of nepotism here in taking somebody with zero experience in hostage negotiations and putting him in a hostage negotiation role. And if you hear what they say about the things that he said and did with Hamas, I mean, it's all like completely unacceptable. The words that he chose, the venue, the tone, and you know, just making some major slips, like referring to Israeli hostages as prisoners and vice versa, Hamas murderer prisoners as hostages, and it's like, these are the kinds of slips of tongue that are not okay in diplomacy. Not to mention the fact that he sat down with them and apparently said something about them being nice guys. This is dangerous. We're talking about some of the most vicious terrorists on earth. Now, all in all, I would say that I personally don't have a blanket issue with bringing outsiders in to solve problems, because I think there's a problem with constantly sticking with the old guard, because old guard has old ideas, and people who live within a box can rarely see outside of the box. And how many metaphors can I use? You can't see the forest through the trees. It's like the you can't see the big picture anymore when you're so stuck in a particular paradigm. So to that extent, I do think that outsiders play a very important role when it comes to breaking norms and looking at things in a completely different direction. However, when you're talking about something as delicate as hostage negotiations, you don't just put in some rando to go in and try to sweet talk Hamas. And so what happened as a result? Well, first of all, so you know, Boehler has been relieved of his duties. Apparently, he will remain in the Trump administration, but no longer in a hostage negotiation role. Okay, so taking him out of the negotiations was definitely a smart and important move. So that leaves us with Witkoff, and I don't know if this this new proposal to let the five Americans out is more a response to the direct communications which Boehler had, or the ongoing communications which Witkoff has been holding. Now, keep in mind that Israel was very upset that I want to say the U.S., but there's a lot of fuzzy information about whether Boehler was acting on his own or on behalf of the administration. So let's just leave it as this guy, Adam, who took it upon himself to meet with Hamas for whatever reason, he got a stern talking to from Ron Dermer in Israel, because first of all, it shows daylight, right, between U.S. and Israel, because wherein Trump has definitely been behaving and has in the past has a tremendous track record of looking out for Israeli interests. It would be ridiculous to say that U.S. and Israel have the same exact interests. Of course they don't, right? And Another thing that that Bowler said that was deeply offensive is he indicated to Hamas that he is not, quote unquote, an agent of Israel. And this sort of leads us into like those anti-Semitic tropes about, well, the Jews actually control America and the world and all the things. And for him to say, like, I'm here representing America, we are not an agent of Israel. Like, that's a pretty like nefarious word, right? Agent sounds like really subversive and shady. And so by separating that out, wouldn't it make sense that Hamas would say, oh, well, if we just let these five American hostages go, and again, a reminder for those of you who are tuning in late, four of whom have already been murdered, and one of whom is strongly believed to still be alive and perhaps even doing relatively well, then, you know, taking that message of, well, let's just make this deal between you and me, wink, wink, and it could very well be at the expense of the rest of the hostages. So there are 59 right now, 34 are presumed to be dead, 35 are presumed to be murdered, 24 are assumed to be alive. So if we bring these five home, there will be 54 left, and 23 of whom will be assumed to be alive, and 31, if my math is correct, I can't even think straight right now, deceased, murdered. So here's the other challenge, right? Like, so originally Hamas took 251, I think, hostages, because originally they said 252, but then they found one of the bodies had been murdered and was still found in Israel. So I think it went down to 251. And A, people have really, really short-term memory, as evidenced by how much the world seems to have forgotten the unmitigated atrocities, the savagery that occurred on October 7th, but that it's like life goes on, you know, like why would you want to, you know, still be thinking about the hostages after 500 and what, 20 something days? I've lost count. And the answer is, if you're bored of it because it's been so long, what that means is it's been so long. We're talking about 24 men who have been enduring extraordinary torture for over 500 days. So the more people get bored with it, the more the hostages are suffering. Imagine 500 days or well over 500 days in solitary confinement with no lights, chained by your hands and by your feet, minimal food, minimal water, no medications, no human contact, no daylight. It's impossible to imagine from my comfortable condo in Brentwood in Los Angeles, right? Like, as sick as it makes me inside, it's impossible to imagine what these hostages are enduring. And if you if that's too hard to think about, you know, another thing to think about is their families. Could you imagine the anguish of a mother who knows that her son has been tortured for 17 and a half months relentlessly? I mean, I think that most mothers would rather themselves be tortured than have to live knowing what their child is enduring. And this is like what makes everything, this Sophie's choice that we have in front of us, so, so difficult. A lot of people are putting the pressure on Netanyahu and saying, just get the hostages home at any cost. And I fully understand the despair. I do not exaggerate when I say that I have been physically ill every single day, all day, every day since October 7th. I do not exaggerate. This has become my everything, and I pray for the release of these hostages, but at the same time, again, like giving Gaza back to Hamas is more than just, let's say, losing the war or losing face or whatever it is. We give it back to the terrorists who have vowed that they will commit more 10/7s over and over and over again until the whole state of Israel is destroyed. Israel cannot have that on their borders anymore. Iran set up this ring of fire of proxies to surround Israel, all making the same threats, also from Judea and Samaria, what some people call the West Bank, also from the north, from Lebanon, which is a very interesting topic, which I talked about before. They have held a ceasefire now with Lebanon for a few months now, I think since the beginning of January, if I'm not mistaken. And it looks as if there's a chance that Lebanon may actually expel Hezbollah from among the ranks, and to there is a chance that they may even, which I prognosticated when I talked about the Lebanon ceasefire, and now more people are talking about the possibility of Lebanon one day maybe even joining the Abraham Accords. And this is like the most important thing. And to the extent that, let's get back to Trump, right? So Trump, everything ultimately is meant to assuage his ego and reassert his power. And one thing he wants more than anything is apparently is a Nobel Peace Prize, which I will argue, love him or hate him, he already deserved for the first set of Abraham Accords. But if he is able, and it looks like he probably will, get Saudi Arabia involved, then I think there's a lot more chance of Lebanon and potentially Syria, because Syria is a completely destabilized nation right now, and we'll see what form that stabilization takes. I mean, Syria is right now being led by a former ISIS terrorist. It's not super promising, except for the fact that he has made overtures saying that he would like to establish peaceful relations with Israel. Now you have to take that with a tremendous grain of salt, like a whole salt mine, because he's got a lot of competing interests right now, and one of them, again, is going to be to appease the Trump administration. But here's the thing. So Israel already has a peace agreement with Egypt, right, which is on the southern border, and it has an agreement with Jordan on the eastern border, okay? If it could get Syria into the Accords. Now, remember, the Accords aren't really a peace agreement. It's more of like a normalization agreement. That would be like the North East Syria, and then Lebanon in the Northwest. Then Iran's Ring of Fire, which was supposed to be these violent terrorist forces that would close in on Israel from all borders to destroy it, could theoretically now transform into a ring of peace. Now, how amazing would that be? It would change everything. So there's always, of course, the predominant and historical context of war to achieve peace, right? We've seen this in every major war. Once the enemy army is utterly defeated, then peace can emerge from there, right? So there's war for peace, which is an inside-out strategy. But then there's this Abraham Accord strategy of peace for peace, which is an outside-in strategy. So imagine that you are a kid in school who's always being beat up by all the bullies in the school. And then suddenly, one of the bullies is like, well, you know what? You're not so bad. I'm no longer going to bully you. I'm not going to be like grabbing Starbucks with you after school, but I'm not going to flush your head down the toilet either. And so he leaves that ring of bullies. And then maybe there's another and he's like, you know what, twerp, you're not even worth my time. I'm also going to just walk away from this and let's just call it a day. And so then if one by one the bullies start saying, okay, we're gonna leave this circle of adversity and instead give peace a chance and see where it leads us, then now we've only got a few sparse people who are still standing there going, guys, hello, we hate this twerp, we hate this guy, come on, guys. And the rest of the people are like, yeah, we're done with that. And so this concept of peace through peace is a very, very worthwhile one to pursue. But in the meantime, the only thing that terrorists understand is strength. And so right now, the only chance right now in this moment today is for peace through strength, which means that Israel must maintain a heavy hand and Israel must commit to actually winning this war. What does winning this war look like? It looks like getting all the hostages home, getting Hamas to lay down its arms, and also securing the border. Those are three very big and difficult war aims. Many, many people will say that they are self-contradictory. So I can't say I disagree. I think that's why the predominant narrative right now is let's get as many hostages home as we can. And nobody wants to talk about the second half of that sentence, which ultimately is going to mean, unfortunately, the sacrifice of anybody who's left. The hostages that are remaining in Gaza have all been surrounded with explosives. that could be detonated at any moment if there is any IDF movement even near them. So on one hand, I guess I could say never say never, but on the other hand, it seems impossible, if not quite nearly impossible, that the IDF will be able to actually go in and save physically any more hostages, keeping in mind that a $5 million reward was offered to any Gazan who returned a hostage, and no one stepped up. No one. And so if you question the ethics of the general Gazan civilian population, keeping in mind that when Hamas drove through Gaza on October 7th with hostages and hostage bodies, the general populace cheered and crowded the parade and spit on the hostages and, you know, abused them and handed out candy, and not a single one of them is stepping up to, even at a $5 million reward, to turn in a single hostage. Now, contrast this to what happened during the Holocaust, and there was like hundreds, if not thousands, of what are called righteous among the nations, non-Jews who literally risked their lives to save not just Jewish neighbors, but Jewish strangers. Because, excuse me, in a moral and upright society, there will always be people who do the moral and upright thing. So this presents a tremendous predicament for Israel because, I mean, seeing what they did with the beepers and the walkie-talkies, and also seeing the unbelievable rescue of Noah Argamani and the others who were rescued that day, if anyone can do it, Israel can do it. There's no question. If there's a problem in this world that anyone can solve, Israel can solve it. The problem is, I don't know that this is a problem that can be solved. So we'll see what happens with this this hostage offer of 5 Americans in exchange for 30 days of ceasefire and who knows how many prisoners. Again, it's very easy for Trump to say, hey, how about this deal, which is very far from the original final threat of every single hostage coming home, but it's easy for him to say it, but he's not the one who has to cease fire, right? Israel does. So I'm sure that that right now Israel is very seriously weighing its options. I think that the priority right now, again, is just get as many hostages home as possible, alive, dead, an acknowledgement that we will not, in any scenario that anybody who's paying attention is presenting, that we will not get everyone home, but for the time being, let's just get every single possible hostage home. My guess is that Israel will accept this deal, even though it is another bad deal, even though it's very, very far from what was promised or threatened by Donald Trump. And of course, the one other thing that I haven't mentioned is, or I don't think I've mentioned it, is seeing what happened in the White House with Zelensky I really put the fear of God into every nation. I was going to say ally, but I say nation because, yes, enemies are taking note, but sadly, that stunt in the White House ambushing Zelensky, who is actually a U.S. ally, and then threatening him and seeing, by the way, how Zelensky predictably has folded because he knows he can't really go at this without American support. If Trump is going to play the game of threatening our own allies to do whatever he says, I mean, what does that mean for Israel? There are so many people who are who believe, and for good reason, that Trump is 100% in Israel's corner because of a million things, because of all the things he did in his first presidency, recognizing Jerusalem as the eternal capital of Israel, and the sovereignty of the Golan Heights and the Abraham Accords, and it, the list goes on. And then now the fact that, like, the very first foreign dignitary he invited to the White House was, of course, Benjamin Netanyahu. And when he cut off temporarily foreign assistance, he did it to everyone but Israel and in Egypt, even though an announcement came out the other day that he is cutting back on the money being given to Egypt as well. And if... Now, that's a whole nother can of worms if you're paying attention to the fact that Egypt has been mobilizing in the Sinai Desert, which goes against the peace agreement with Israel. So this may become another tenuous, another unstable border. But the fact that right now Trump nationalism or perhaps isolationism, again, being heavily influenced by J.D. Vance, perhaps would scare a lot of people vis-a-vis Israel. And again, the Zelensky thing shows an astounding lack of loyalty to a friend. And the question now is, could he turn on a dime on Israel if Bibi doesn't do every single thing that Trump says? And if so, where does that leave Israel? And unfortunately, we saw right after the Zelensky dumpster fire that, like, immediately Netanyahu starts tweeting, thank you, America, thank you, Trump, thank you, this. You know, like, he does not want to be that ingrate who Trump, on a whim, decides, yeah, you know what, I'm not that interested in you anymore, so here's the deal, take it or leave it. And that he could be like, we're going to get 5 American hostages out and you're on your own. You can do whatever you want. We will give you the bombs, but we're done with the hostage negotiations. And, you know, and then where does it leave Bibi? Because the thing about these idle threats is it makes Trump look bad, right? If Trump is like, this is your last warning, give us back all the hostages or all hell will break loose, and he says it 3 times and nothing happens, then that makes him look weak, it makes him look bad, and it's like this little tiny terror organization in Gaza is defying the president of the United States, the leader of the free world. And so there's also the possibility that that dynamic can come back to bite Israel, because Trump could be like, you know what? I gave you the permission and I gave you the munitions to make all hell break loose, and you did not take advantage of that. And so, A, that's on you, Israel, and B, you made me look bad. And so that could be very, very dangerous. So I'm praying that these five come home, even though four have already been murdered, getting Edan Alexander home, every life saved, the Torah says, is an entire universe saved. And I 100% believe that. But I hope that in the U.S. basically fighting only for its own citizens, it does not abandon the other 54 hostages who will remain in brutal Hamas captivity. Shabbat Shalom.